Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
The truth is the most convincing story that maps onto reality, and that's why the central narrative is falling apart.
Right now in the United States, people should not be walking around with masks.
We must see the central narrative for the fiction that it is. We are Americans.
While elections are sometimes messy, this was a secure election.
The founders began the fight for human liberty and self-governance, and it's up to us to finish the job.
I tell you what, we are in a truth emergency right now.
This is the end game.
It's Thursday, March 14th, 2024, the 1149th day of dystopia. I'm your moderator, Chris Paul. Let's be reasonable. A warm welcome and hello to all of you listening to the podcast on the day of its release. The only way to do that is by becoming a paid subscriber at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as little as $50 a year or $5 a month, and in doing so, you will be supporting me, the work I do, and this show as it expands. And if you can't or you simply don't want to, continue listening to the podcast for free on a wide variety of podcast platforms and, of course, Rumble. All I ask is that you share it with your friends. You can find the links to the podcast, the writing, the social media, and the merch site by visiting linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. Now, at the end of the episode yesterday, I said I was going to take the day off today. And when I said it, oh, I meant it. But now I don't mean it anymore. So here I am. I realized when I concluded the episode yesterday, when I was reviewing my notes, that there was an entire other section I was going to go into, but after something like a 5-hour long recording session and it being well into the evening by the time I finished the show and posted it, the point I reached yesterday was about as far as I was prepared to go. So think of this as something of a part two to yesterday's episode, The Court of Public Opinion. Now, yesterday, I began the discussion talking about Trump's win in the fake GOP primaries. Despite participating in virtually none of the process, Trump dominated it from the beginning, and to the extent the elections were real, Trump clearly won them. But as with all our recent elections, including and especially the presidential election of 2020, there is absolutely no reason to believe that the reported vote totals have any connection to the reality of voters who actually participated and cast their votes. Now, neither Trump nor his supporters are up in arms about this because Trump was announced the winner. If Trump was not announced the winner of all these primaries, using the same systems, people would absolutely assume fraud. And not just Trump supporters, Republicans in general would assume fraud. Democrats would assume fraud because no matter what they've been told about Donald Trump, they don't actually believe that Nikki Haley or Ron DeSantis were ever more popular. And no, I'm not saying that they would rise up in protest. I'm just saying that they'd know. Anyone who has put any amount of time into studying our election systems knows that they are fully incapable of providing a reported result that reflects the will and intent of the voters. But these results go uncontested because everybody understands that the proper outcome was achieved. That is a result of victory in narrative warfare. It's not a result of hearing a series of reported vote totals and assuming that they're true. Donald Trump has won the election in the public collective mind already. And when the elections are rigged, when the votes don't count, the narrative warfare is all that's left. But the truth is, even if all the votes were real and accurately counted and reported, that would still only be a product of winning the narrative warfare. The narrative warfare is the only thing that matters. The victory exists in the public consciousness, in the court of public opinion. People think it's a black pill to believe that our elections cannot be trusted, that the outcomes can't be trusted, and that in this 2024 election, we are not assured of getting a legitimate outcome. But that's not a black pill because we've already won the bigger victory so long as we hold it by telling the truth and pushing for good and right things. Biden supporters, whether they be Democrats or Republicans, and I include Ron DeSantis supporters and Nikki Haley supporters in the group of Biden supporters, these are the people who legitimize the illegitimate president. They support Joe Biden. Joe Biden would not exist as fake president without them. All of those people believe that Joe Biden, quote unquote, won the election with the votes, with the Electoral College votes. Where has that gotten any of them? They have spent all their time for well over 3 years now desperately clinging to power and aggressively trying to destroy anyone who might even think about contesting their very loosely held power. Even that's not an option anymore, unless something absolutely catastrophic and earth-shattering happens in the next 8 months. They have no chance of maintaining any of that power, not because they've lost control of the election system, but because they've lost control of the flow of information. They've lost control of the narrative. They've been beaten. No one would believe they could come back and win. So if you think that the election system's problems are the black pill and that we can solve all of that by pressing buttons on an iPad attached to a black box, I would suggest you're missing the big picture. There is absolutely no reason to lose heart because to be winning and dominating in narrative warfare against propaganda, censorship, political persecution, and any other manner of shutdown and shaming you can imagine, you have to have the truth on your side and a vast, vast majority. And that's what we have, and it is continuing to grow. Despite the unconscionable amount of censorship we have already been subjected to over the last few years, they continue to believe that it is not enough. They are working to censor us on social media platforms across the board, and right now they're working to ban TikTok on the basis that it is a Chinese Communist Party information weapon being used to propagandize American citizens and steal our data, handing it to the Chinese Communist Party. The truth is that all of our legacy social media platforms fit all of those characteristics. Meta's apps, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp, Threads now, Google, its search engine, its ad service, YouTube, Twitter, Snapchat, all of those performed all of the same functions. They tracked us completely and handed that data over to the global regime. Does it really matter whether it passed through computers in China or computers in Russia or computers in the UK or Australia or here? Global regime is global regime. The evil twin faction exists in every country all around the world. The entire thing works together in pursuit of the liberal, international, rules-based world order. We then talked a bit about the Fannie Willis trial and how Judge Scott McAfee dismissed a series of charges comprising her RICO indictment of Donald Trump and others. And we talked about how, like elections, if the court system is illegitimate, then all we have to rely on is the narrative warfare, the decision in the court of public opinion, and Donald Trump will win there as well. As we discussed yesterday, the dismissal of some of those charges was related to the phone call between Donald Trump and his team and Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and his team. That call was illegally recorded by Raffensperger's underling, Jordy Fuchs. We had a widespread rerun last week announcing that the call was illegally recorded, and now Judge McAfee has had to dismiss certain related charges. Not because the call was illegally recorded, of course. He can't go and admit that to the country. That has to remain a conspiracy theory now for at least a couple more reruns. No, he dismissed the charges on the basis that Fannie Willis, the expert district attorney, the prosecutor down in Georgia, and her lover, Nathan Wade, didn't actually say what crime Donald Trump asked Brad Raffensperger to commit. So you can't very well charge Trump with asking Brad Raffensperger to somehow violate his oath of office. So it felt like I found a sensible point to stop yesterday, and that I had adequately made my point. But the truth is, that wasn't the only way the Fannie Willis case is falling apart in the court of public opinion. And it's not just that and her affair with Nathan Wade. The case is springing leaks all over the place. There was a viral moment from Fannie Willis's testimony a couple weeks back where she shouted in frustration about how she wasn't the one on trial here. Donald Trump was the one on trial for trying to overturn an election. But does that even sound true at all anymore? You're watching, you're paying attention. Does it seem like Donald Trump is on trial for overturning an election? It seems to me like all of these members of the Uniparty, all of these people serving the interests of that global regime, it seems like they are all on trial in the court of public opinion. To be honest, it seems like they've done us the favor of going and indicting themselves. And so I will come back to that in just a few minutes. But first, there are some updates in this developing TikTok story we've been tracking. In response to the passage of that bill in the House, a Chinese foreign ministry spokesperson named Wang Wenbin said such practice of resorting to hegemonic moves when one could not succeed in fair competition disrupts the normal operation of businesses, undermines the confidence of international investors in the investment environment, sabotages the normal economic and trade order in the world, and will eventually backfire on the U.S. itself. Wang also said that the U.S. had been unable to find any evidence of TikTok threatening U.S. national security, a claim many in Washington would dispute. This is the Business Insider, by the way. What our intel community said in its threat assessment this week that came out conveniently right before the move to ban TikTok, what they said was that China was going to use TikTok to influence our elections this fall, while the people who voted yesterday to ban TikTok all support the illegitimate president and are themselves the product of illegitimate elections. It's hard to imagine they don't know that. It's hard to imagine they don't know that and that it is being done in concert with a global regime, a collection of foreign and domestic powers. They are the product of the very election interference they pretend to be protecting us from. Now, I can't possibly know what Wang Wenbin means when he says that this is going to backfire on the United States, but considering who voted to pass this legislation and considering the political viewpoints of the platforms that are preferenced through this legislation, a backfire would then mean something that helps Donald Trump, or at least helps the sovereign nationalist movement worldwide. It might not be that they're saying, you think this is going to hurt China, it's going to help China, It could very well be something more nuanced, something said with an understanding of the good twin, evil twin dynamic, rather than pretending there is some contest between China as a whole and the United States as a whole. Now, we talked yesterday about the Trump administration's efforts in 2020 to ban TikTok and how they approached that. In the article from the National Pulse by Will Upton, Upton discussed two possible approaches that were championed by two different members of Trump's administration. He wrote, one faction, predominantly led by Treasury Secretary Steve Mnuchin, sought a path to force ByteDance to divest itself from the TikTok app through a sale to an American company. The other faction, centered around White House economic advisor Peter Navarro, pushed for an outright ban of the popular Chinese-controlled social media app through an executive order. He goes on to discuss how Donald Trump pushed for TikTok to be sold to an American company, suggesting Microsoft and Oracle, and that nothing ended up happening. The court shut all this down. ByteDance wasn't helping the situation, and the whole effort was abandoned till now. So last week, we heard about this passing through committee. Donald Trump immediately said he didn't like the idea. He thought this would actually end up helping Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg, a platform and a tech oligarch that were legitimately involved in the theft of the 2020 election. Then we got the threat assessment. Then right before the vote, Rumble CEO Chris Pavlovsky comes out talking about foreign countries controlling cloud servers and offering to join a consortium to buy TikTok. Now, Rumble already has its Rumble Cloud. Donald Trump's Truth Social is on that Rumble Cloud. Next week, we have the merger of DWAC and TMTG, so that's big news for Truth Social. TMTG and Rumble aren't formally partners, but there is some kind of partnership there. They have common business interests at minimum. So there's already something interesting at work there. And then today, it goes up even one more level. So Chris Pavlovsky said he would join a consortium and offer to buy TikTok so that Rumble would operate TikTok in America, divested from ByteDance. And now remember who was promoting divestiture back in 2020. It was this guy, Steve Mnuchin. Here he is today.
President Trump signed an order that TikTok had to be sold. And I continue to believe that. So I think the legislation should pass. And I think it should be sold. I understand the technology. It's a great business. And I'm going to put together a group to buy TikTok.
You're trying to buy TikTok.
I am, because this should be owned by U.S. businesses. There's no way that the Chinese would ever let a U.S. company own something like this in China.
Have you already put a group together?
No, I'm working
on it. You're exploring a group.
I've spoken to a bunch of people, but
who would be part of your group?
I can't tell that to you now, but it would be a combination of investors. So there would be no one investor that controlled this. And the issue is all about the technology. This needs to be controlled by U.S.
Let me ask you a very practical question. If you talk to folks inside the world of TikTok themselves, they would suggest that it is almost impossible within a six-month time period to truly divest it to another group that, frankly, isn't a Meta or a Google, if you will. Because the data for the users is in the U.S., but the algorithm and so much of the other operations are outside of the U.S. What do you know about, now that you've studied this business several years ago, and I imagine you continue to, how you would actually operationally do it?
Well, let me first say, I don't think this should be controlled by any of the big U.S. tech companies. I think there could be antitrust issues on that, and this should be something that's independent, so we have a real competitor, and users love it, so it shouldn't be shut down. The technology, I won't go into all the details, but the app needs to be rebuilt in the U.S. It needs to be U.S. technology. I think there's a lot that could be done in 6 months, but I would work closely with the U.S. and with China.
But do you think that the bill would need to get rewritten by the Senate, effectively, to give you more than 6 months? Is it a timing issue? Do you think
I think a lot can be done in 6 months. It may take a little bit longer, but I think the bigger issue is this shouldn't be controlled by the Chinese.
It is
an issue for this to be on everybody's
phone.
Why?
Explain why. What are the reasons?
There are certain things I can talk about that are obvious, and there's certain things that I can't talk about that I had access to. But let's just say, when you have this app on everybody's phone, it has the ability to collect an awful lot of data.
Can I ask a question about that, though? And this is the thing that I think nobody knows, and you may be one of the few people who does. Do you believe that the data that it is collecting today, both the data that's being collected and potentially certain things that are being pushed to the users, is being influenced and directed by the Chinese government today? Or do you look at this as a prospective national security threat, meaning it has not been put into practice in any meaningful way right now, but the worry is that one day it could? Which is it?
Well, I'm not going to comment on what's today, but I will comment. There's no question that on a forward basis, they have both the ability to influence the data and they have the ability to collect data, which is probably the bigger concern.
But you're not going to comment on today because you can't do that without giving away things that you might know that others wouldn't?
That's true. And also, I think kind of the issue today, again, I think the focus should be it should be sold. It should be controlled by a U.S. business. It's a great company. It would be terrible if it would shut down. Lots of users use
this. What do you think it'll do?
And we need a competitor to Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube.
To the extent.
So Steve Mnuchin, the guy who was pushing for the divestiture option when the Trump administration was figuring all of this out in 2020, Mnuchin, a member of the Trump administration, the Treasury Secretary, he wants to buy TikTok. He says he's familiar with the technology, the changes that need to be made. We need the technology to be controlled in the U.S. and we need competition for Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And we certainly do need that. What are the chances that 4 years later, the guy who was pushing for divestiture in the Trump administration could now be ostensibly the beneficiary of this bill forcing ByteDance to divest? I am really looking forward to seeing what happens after next Friday when DWAC and TMTG merge. Something to potentially look out for in the distant future. If it turns out that Rumble, Truth Social, TikTok, and perhaps even X, formerly Twitter, end up becoming even closer knit than they are now. If Mnuchin acquires TikTok, if Rumble is a partner in the acquisition of TikTok, what if DWAC is a partner in the acquisition of TikTok? What if we hear that Elon Musk wants to jump in on that technology? Maybe even toss Getter in there. Then you have direct competition to Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. And I imagine the next logical step of that process would include some sort of antitrust action against that new social media conglomerate to break it up. I imagine they would win. That conglomerate would break up, everything becoming decentralized. That would then lay down precedent to break up Meta, Google, etc. We are entering into a very interesting future when it comes to these information technologies. Okay, so let's get back toward Fani Willis, and we will approach her this way. Representative Barry Loudermilk of Georgia on Monday presented his initial findings report from the House Subcommittee on Oversight. He is investigating the Sham J6 investigation. And so he released an 81-page report and also a one-pager. Let's just start with the one-pager for now. Initial findings report on the failures and politicization of the January 6th Select Committee, the activities on and leading up to January 6th, 2021. The Subcommittee on Oversight is investigating the security failures of January 6th, which House Democrats failed to investigate in the 117th Congress. We are focused on identifying and reviewing the numerous security failures on and leading up to January 6th, 2021, and reviewing the creation, operation, and claims made by Speaker Nancy Pelosi's Select Committee to investigate the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol. So as I said, this is just the one pager. This is the top line summary of what's in the report. Key findings. The Select Committee was designed to promote a political narrative. Pelosi made the unprecedented decision to refuse to appoint minority members chosen by the minority to the Select Committee. They hired Hollywood producers to assist with their primetime hearings. They refused to adopt rules, allowing them to operate without limits to project their predetermined narrative to the world. And we have gone into that extensively. They admit it. They are proud of it. They have made documentaries about this process and said quite clearly that the purpose of this process was to convince the American people that their narrative about the very violent insurrection, while it may not actually be true, is very important to believe. Cheney was a vice chair, a position reserved for a Democrat. Cheney was not the minority ranking member, but served as vice chair of the Select Committee, a position under House rules for a member of the same party as the chair. Pelosi appointed Cheney to the Select Committee as one of Pelosi's 8 majority appointments to the Select Committee. Former Select Committee staff members spoke out against Cheney's insistence that the Select Committee focus on President Trump. So Liz Cheney was not appointed to this committee by the leader of her party. She was appointed by Nancy Pelosi as one of the members of Pelosi's party that should be named to the committee. And she was appointed vice chair despite not being designated as a ranking member of her own party in that committee. The Select Committee deleted records and hid evidence. Representatives Thompson and Cheney failed to turn over video recordings of witness interviews and depositions despite using these recordings in their high-profile primetime hearings. The subcommittee recovered over 100 deleted or password-protected files, including some files that were deleted days before Republicans took the majority. They also hid multiple transcribed interviews of witnesses who had firsthand knowledge of Trump's actions on January 6th. The Select Committee promoted star witness Hutchinson's testimony. Representatives Thompson and Cheney promoted Cassidy Hutchinson's sensational revised testimony and hid witness testimony from White House and Secret Service employees with firsthand knowledge that directly contradicted Hutchinson's version of events. Hutchinson conducted 3 transcribed interviews with the Select Committee before substantially revising her story in her 4th transcribed interview. Despite knowing how significantly her testimony changed, the Select Committee promoted it as fact. Hutchinson's sensational story about Trump lunging at steering wheel in SUV after speech at the Ellipse was directly refuted by the driver of the SUV. Representatives Thompson and Cheney were aware that the Secret Service agent driving the SUV on January 6th directly refuted Hutchinson's testimony. Despite this, they still included her testimony in the final report and insisted it was credible. Now, the fact that the committee was illegitimately formed invalidates the entire thing from the beginning, of course. The fact that the minority party was not allowed to choose its own representatives on the committee is preposterous. There was no ranking member. There was no cross-examination. There were no witnesses to testify to anything that contradicts the central narrative, an entirely fictionalized central narrative about January 6th. In itself, that would have been bad enough to invalidate the whole thing, and ultimately it will be. All we watched was a TV show. That was not some legitimate congressional proceeding. And of course, it got much worse from there. But Barry Loudermilk saved the best for last in this case. The Select Committee colluded with Fonnie Willis. Fulton County District Attorney wrote to the Select Committee seeking assistance with her prosecution of President Trump. Select Committee staff met with representatives from her office. So how about that? Let's hear some more about that. So we can go to the initial findings report released by Representative Loudermilk. You go to the table of contents, Fonnie Willis, page 49. Let's go there. Collusion with Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis. During its initial review of records archived by the Select Committee, the subcommittee discovered a letter from Fulton County District Attorney Fonnie Willis to the Select Committee dated December 17th, 2021. In this letter, Willis requested access to any Select Committee records relevant to her investigation into President Trump's actions to challenge the 2020 presidential election, including, quote, recordings and transcripts of witness interviews and depositions, electronic and print records of communications, and records of travel, end quote. Based on public reporting, the Select Committee shared important records with Willis and the Fulton County District Attorney's Office. According to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, the Select Committee provided Fulton County prosecutors key evidence about what former President Trump and his top advisors knew with respect to Georgia's 2020 election results. Politico also reported that Fannie Willis's staff met with the Select Committee in April 2022 and participated in multiple phone calls with the Fulton County District Attorney's Office. The same video recordings that the Fulton County District Attorney requested were never archived by the Select Committee. Although no additional communications between the Select Committee and the Fulton County District Attorney's Office were archived by the Select Committee, the prospect of the Select Committee sharing video recordings of witness interviews with Willis, but not this subcommittee, remains particularly concerning. The subcommittee has opened an investigation into the extent of the coordination between Willis and the Select Committee and is committed to uncovering answers to these questions. So the Fulton County District Attorney was coordinating with the illegitimately formed Sham Congressional J6 Committee. Loudermilk's office has requested all records of communications between the illegitimate J6 committee and Fannie Willis, district attorney in Fulton County. And though that request was submitted late last year, the only response so far has been for Benny Thompson to call all of it MAGA propaganda. So the illegitimate committee that allowed no opposition witnesses or cross-examination, the illegitimate committee that staged a primetime television show and hid exonerating evidence from the accused, that illegitimate committee was coordinating as long ago as late 2021 with Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis, both the committee and the district attorney investigation, totally devoted to getting Trump. You just heard from Loudermilk's one-pager that even staffers on the Select Committee had spoken out against Cheney's insistence that the Select Committee focus on Donald Trump's role. So we have Liz Cheney operating the Sham J6 Committee in order to get Trump, and we have Fannie Willis operating the Fulton County District Attorney's Office in order to get Trump. I've said many times, Fannie Willis essentially copy and pasted a Brookings Institution white paper into her indictment, which could explain why there is no specificity in the indictment making an accusation on how exactly Donald Trump asked Brad Raffensperger to violate his oath in that illegally recorded conversation. And hey, wouldn't you know it, just a few days before that primetime television show began on June 6th, 2022, the Brookings Institution released another report, Trump on Trial, A Guide to the January 6th Hearings and the Question of Criminality. It's 104 pages long, and they say that it has links to all sorts of documentation and source materials. It's just your go-to, especially if you're a media member trying to help the Sham J6 committee tell their ridiculous fictional story about the very violent insurrection. It's an invaluable resource. You can just go right to it. Oh, here are all the links for everything I need to at least convince myself and my audience that all of what we're being told is backed up with quote unquote facts. In each one of these instances, all these major issues, these crimes that Donald Trump has committed, we have a Brookings Institution paper laying out all the information. Are we supposed to believe that the Sham J6 committee was anything but a television show? They got a number of their favorite TV characters to sit on this so-called committee and perform for the cameras, to convince the country that their version of the very violent insurrection narrative was actually true. Did these people investigate anything? What is the proof that they investigated anything? They're saying they can't turn over so much of their evidence. I mean, I guess they had some depositions. We've seen some of those. But are we really supposed to imagine that Benny Thompson was sitting in his congressional office going through box after box of documents, really trying to get to the bottom of things? That guy is a stone cold moron. Adam Kinzinger? Was Adam Kinzinger doing deep investigative work? So we know that Fani Willis was coordinating with the J6 committee. And we know Fani Willis was coordinating with the White House. We know both of those efforts were Get Trump efforts. We know the White House was coordinating with Alvin Bragg. We know the White House was coordinating with Jack Smith. We know that the sham J6 committee report is being used as the basis for some of these other trials, including as the basis for the claim that Donald Trump committed insurrection, which meant he should be taken off the ballot by the Colorado Secretary of State. Now, they lost that case in the Supreme Court, but the J6 committee report was still the basis for the initial claim that Donald Trump had committed insurrection, something that is literally impossible as the head of government. So what you get when you start looking at this picture is fiction all the way down. From the J6 committee's report all the way to the formation of the J6 committee, each and every bit of that has been illegitimate. They have presented a false story, a fiction to the American public about an event that was being fictionalized as it was being shown on live television. And then you can go the other direction from that report and see that the false and fictionalized report was itself used as the basis to spin off an entirely new Get Trump effort when it comes to the ballot measure. Now, the Supreme Court decided the right direction on that. And as I've said at length, I think that we will probably get to see that issue come up again in the future, because the court essentially just shifted the responsibility for that decision from any official in a given state to the U.S. Congress. And if that occurs, what will be the recourse? The recourse will have to come from the people at some point. If they even had the courage to attempt to do something like have the Congress vote that Donald Trump is ineligible to serve as president after he has already been elected, quote unquote, they would do so in polar opposition to the stated will of the American public and the verdict already reached in the court of public opinion. And that verdict will be well-founded because it will be achieved after having seen all of this play out in public in what seems to be official scenario after official scenario, Donald Trump and his side of the story, his case, being proven correct at each and every step. And I'm not suggesting we are all the way through that right now, but I think that we will be in the next 7.5 months. All of these claims against Trump are pure fiction from top to bottom. The only part of this, the only belief that people can't seem to shake, is the belief that official bodies really are prosecuting this, and that there is some chance that Trump might actually end up in prison someday as the result of these court determinations, or that he might actually go broke, or that he might actually lose his business or his properties. He's having to give up $500 million. Is all of that fake? Well, you tell me. Is he going through the steps to make it seem real? Well, yeah, for the most part. But is all that going to be reversed? Yes. Is he dropping off bags of cash at the courthouse? No. So he's taking some of the numbers that he has control over and he's moving them into a category of numbers that someone else has control over. And then someday those numbers will go right back to his control. That's if any of the numbers are real to begin with, and there's no requirement that they are, because of course, the numbers too are a fiction. We have a fiat currency that the global regime's bankers simply create out of nothing, and then they hand it to one another in order to reward one another for the good work they do in pushing the agenda of that global regime forward. And if you are highly capable at pushing their agenda forward, you might be able to participate in that incentive structure as well, so long as you only ever want to be fulfilled within the false reality. But if Trump's not going to serve time, and he's not going to pay the money, then what's the penalty? Well, I guess he's paying lawyers now, and he's spending time now. Okay. He's also using these indictments as a campaign, and every time he wastes money on one of these quote-unquote court proceedings, it serves as a campaign event where he would have already spent time. While these proceedings evolve, the American people get to hash out each and every one of these issues in the most micro sense. Now, it is depressing to have to face so many brain-dead communists and their ability to hold sway over this group of impressionable standard-issue villagers who just want to watch television. But at least their rampant delusion and degeneracy serves a purpose for the rest of us. Our society is being educated on all of these issues. We are being shown the worst of what an illegitimate, authoritarian, dictatorial regime can do. It's all happening to Donald Trump. And because they've chosen to go after him and to go after us in the way they have actually laid down the predicate for their own demise, because no one will hesitate to turn this around and go back at them. And indeed, that's what's already happening. Fannie Willis indicted Donald Trump, we were told, last August. Fannie Willis has indicted herself. Fannie Willis has indicted the whole system. Fannie Willis believes that she is not on trial. Donald Trump is on trial. But Fannie Willis is on trial. In the eyes of the public, in the public consciousness, Fannie Willis is the one on trial right now. And indeed, she's also the one on trial in reality, because only one of the people between her and Donald Trump, only one of them has a chance to actually be punished in reality in a way that lasts longer than the next 12 months. And you can go up and down the roster and see the same thing. And all of these issues revolve around things that happened before the fake president took office. We are seeing late stage reruns, the end of all these stories, an end we already knew but couldn't accept because no one else was watching. These people have indicted themselves, and they are on trial right now in the court of public opinion, just as Donald Trump is, just as everyone is. Everyone is always on trial in the court of public opinion. And then it becomes a matter of how you're going to live your life. Are you actually going to live your life as a good, upstanding person? You have a healthy fear of God and guide your life that way? Having faith that doing what's right will eventually carry you through and win the day? Or are you one of those people who understands that you are on trial in the court of public opinion, and the way to win is to try to manipulate public opinion and manipulate your own self-image through a series of lies and all of these false constructs that get propped up around all of us throughout our lives? That's what it is to be a member of the party of false decorum. There are two paths. It's not hard to see which one to take. And that is what we are watching in the real world. We are watching this abstract projection of power, as Jason Lowry would refer to it in Soft War, disintegrate before our eyes. People no longer believe that those who project the most power actually wield that power in a legitimate way, or that they achieved power through a meritocracy and not through nepotism. The legitimacy of the abstract power structure is falling. Everyone is on trial in the court of public opinion all the time. And despite the propaganda, the censorship, the political persecution, and all the rest of it, we have achieved narrative dominance. Now, tomorrow I am going to try to actually get to some writing, so I very likely will not have an episode up tomorrow. I will most likely, in that case, see you back here on Monday at the same reasonable time on the same reasonable podcast network. I don't have a network. Masked and lockdowns don't work. They lied to you about a pandemic, and Joe Biden will never be president.
In my mind, that's the end game.
If you're listening to this episode for free, you can support me and support the show and the work I do by signing up for a paid subscription at imyourmoderator.substack.com. You can do so for as low as $50 a year or $5 a month. Comes out to under a quarter per episode, and you'll blast right through the paywall for all of the writing. The merch store is www.cancelcouture.com, and you can find everything else by heading to Linktree. Linktree.com/I'm Your Moderator. And I'll see you soon out on the range.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
In my mind, that's the end game.
Thanks for listening. If you'd like to follow what I'm reading and thinking throughout the day, you can do that by downloading the Telegram Messenger app and going to t.me/I'm Your Moderator. On social media, you can follow me on Truth Social, Getter, and Gab at I'm Your Moderator. I also have channels on Rumble and BitChute. If you'd like to follow the writing, you can find me at imyourmoderator.substack.com. The merch site is cancelcouture.com or go direct shop.spreadshirt.com/cancel-couture. If you'd like to support the podcast financially, the best place to do that is Ko-Fi. Go to ko-fi.com/I'm Your Moderator. And all of these details will appear in the show notes with each episode. I'll see you soon down on the range.
It's happening!